This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to episode 58 of Cooking with Grief, one of the internet's undisclosed comedy general knowledge podcasts. That's right, we have a ranking, we don't know it. You don't need to know it, but we exist, and that's all that counts. I'm Chris, and as ever, I'm joined by my similarly named co-host, Chris.
Hello, that's me. We share a name, if not a lover.
Indeed.
I mean, it's probably fair to say that this podcast is one of the more popular internet-based general knowledge comedy podcasts compared to, say, anyone that any of our listeners hosts. So we're doing better than you. Audience.
Unless, of course, you are the host of
Sandy Toksvig's listening to this.
Yeah. Yeah, in which case we'll just have to take an L.
Yeah, I would gladly take an E. Like, it's nice to, I think, highly of this podcast. I'm glad that, people like it. We're not QI. Like, I don't think anyone has ever accused us of being it.
No, I think we've dodged that one, particular accusation quite well.
Yeah, we're not sold out like that behemoth of a show has.
But what we do have in common with QI is a weird and wonderful. Wonderful might be a strong word because some of them are frankly disturbing.
Wonderlight.
Yeah, facts and interesting topics. So, and I mean, I wasn't very Stephen Fry-esque.
I don't know if you sold it particularly well, but I don't know if there are any buyers either, so I think it's all broadly fine.
So, just in case we have any new listeners, maybe this is Sandy's first time. The format of this show is the old format, which you may or may not be used to, is that we bring two topics.
Sorry, Ms. Toksvig, I know it's your first time. We've recently changed our format.
We normally bring two topics each, which could be about anything from science to history, art, or cultural phenomena. But this time, because we know your time is precious and we are not, we've decided that we're going to shorten it and we're going to bring one topic each. And we're going to tell each other, and by extension you, the audience, and for the first time. So you learn as we learn.
It's a really good move to suggest that it's for the audience's benefit. It's like, we know you're busy, so here's less of us. Yeah, I mean, rather than the truth, which is my schedule has not been conducive to long record sessions, but...
We say as we waffle on in this... supposedly succinct intro.
Okay, yeah, good point. Let's crack on, shall we?
And on that note, Chris, it's over to you for your first topic.
So, with the announcement that we're trialling some shorter episodes, for my topic, I wanted to talk about something that takes far longer than it needs to.
Is it one of our outros?
As good as any, it could Sting's tantric love sessions, but like either our intros or our outros work equally well. What's the longest you've ever spent on a single game of something?
Video game or...
Video game, board game.
Oh, here's one. I don't have a time on it. I wasn't recording it. And it's very weird. But in my parents' house, we have The Simpsons board game from, 1999 or something like that. And it's basically like Monopoly. You got a board and you go around it and there's money. It turns out, we played it Christmas, a couple of years ago. It is the longest board game ever. Because you got to get, the winner is, the person who is the first to reach, say, $1,000 or something. And it was taking so long, we decided to halve it to $500. And it still took forever. Because, I think, again, similar to Monopoly, you get money if you land on X square and you lose money if you land on whatever. You go around the board and all that. And you basically lose as much as you... It seems to be the number of boards that give you money, squares that give you, and the number that take it or whatever, basically equal. So you just 50-50 chance every time. So you basically just seem to Oh, I've got $100. Oh, I've lost $100. Oh, I've got $100. Oh, I've lost $100. It just wouldn't fucking end. I think we just gave up in the end after doing it and being like, we've gone round the board 8,000 times.
It's now Boxing Day and none of us are happy. Yeah. Well, it's like when Monopoly is a classic example of like, you know, everyone's got fond memories of it until you actually play it again and you're like, Jesus, is like, there is a quick version that no one seems to play, which is if someone lands on a property and decides not to buy it, that goes up for auction. So by the time you've gone around the board, then most of the most of the properties have gone. Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
No, well, that's maybe what it says on the box, but like you say, everyone ignores them.
Yeah, which is weird because it's like almost like play tested by the official rules. And it turns out like Monopoly, if it's like a 2 hour max game, is like quite fun.
Mm-hmm.
But the way everyone else plays it is a horrible stalemate.
Also reminds me of why I don't really enjoy poker that much. Like, I like poker a little bit, but when everyone played it, I'm always like, things are going, you know, because like some card games and stuff, you can like dip in or out, like blackjack, you know, you can play a few hands and then you're done. Whereas poker's like goes again until there's one person left. I'll be doing it, and I'll be doing, you know, I usually start off doing like, quite, you know, reasonably well, and I'm like, you know, I'm winning and I'm, you know, I'm up. And then I get to a certain point where I just get bored. I'm like, I just want this game to end. And I don't care if I win or lose. And, you know, just end up going all in on a pair of twos or something. Because just like, I don't give a shit anymore. Like, I just want to go home, take my money.
I just want it to end, yeah.
So it's like, I would literally pay you to just stop playing at this stage because I'm bored.
Whereas it might be like a more sort of juvenile game, but Snap really does like rattle along.
Oh, yeah,
that
one's great.
Yeah, and there's the threat of mild violence, which is always nice. Well, okay, so for my topic, I want to talk about a board game that makes your paltry 24-hour Simpsons game marathon look like an opening round, because I'm going to talk about a board game called The Campaign for North Africa, which is a sprawling tabletop military strategy board game.
It's a bit of a wordy title. You know, you got like Monopoly, Scrabble, Campaign for North Africa.
Yeah, well, you could call it CFNA. Or
that's true.
Fucking ah! If you prefer. It takes around 1,500 hours to complete.
What's that in like days? I can't do the maths fast.
Well, for example, if me and you, we met up and we played this game for, say, 3 hours... twice a month, it'd take us 20 years to finish.
Fucking hell.
Which, I mean, like, our friendship isn't yet 20 years old.
No.
And we don't, I mean, we don't record this for 3 hours twice a month.
That's true.
It's nowhere near as fun as kind of, nah. So this board game, it takes place during the World War II campaign in Libya and Egypt between 1940 and 43, and it's set on a 10-foot long map and is designed for 10 players, 5 allies and 5 axis, and contains nearly 2,000 cardboard pieces. Basically, each player takes on the role of either a frontline, air, rear, logistics or commander-in-chief. Like a frontline commander, air commander, blah blah blah. But you can play with fewer people but take on more roles. Now,
that's good.
in case you've not got 10 friends that you want to not be friends with anymore. The reason it takes so long is because the rules are like so granular, like from like the big macro decisions of like what army moves where, right down to like complicated spreadsheets where you keep track of like rations and fuel, but like there's so many like little tiny rules for it. So for example, like Italian troops require an extra water ration to boil the pasta, or they become disorganized.
sounds kind of xenophobic and stereotypical there.
Yeah, it's also like
The Italians. Yeah, I don't have my pasta, and I'm lost.
I mean, I think that accent was as offensive as the like thing of itself, but or maybe the fact that every game turn 3% of fuel evaporates, unless you're playing as the British before a certain date, because they use 50-gallon drums instead of jerry cans, so you lose 7% of the fuel expenses. It's basically like a super, super detailed, and it's
weird. The only game ever that is less fun than an actual war.
I don't know, British Bulldog felt like a war at school. But what's weird is, like, as a video game, like something like Civilization or like Age of Empires or whatever, mm-hmm. like, does go into that level of detail, but obviously it's a computer making all those calculations for you.
Yeah.
The idea of, like, in your spare time, then, you know, the game can't move on until you've worked out, mm-hmm. like, 3% of your fuel, like, has evaporated. It's just clearly not a fun game. And reading about the game's creator, it's like, he didn't design it to be fun, he designed it to be very mathematically challenging, and like, but like, reward logistics. So Richard Berg, who made the game, and who is quite a big name in like tabletop strategy board game world or whatever, mm-hmm. He's never finished a campaign, and it was never play tested well enough to ensure it was balanced before they made it, because they were on a deadline, and then like they said, oh fuck it, we'll just put it out, and the play testers went, well, we've not even finished one game, because it takes on average like 7 years to finish, like when you're doing it full time, so it's not ready. And Berg, the game's creator, said, you know what, if someone tells you it's unbalanced, tell them we think it's your fault. Play it again. So someone, like, they did try and finish it. A group of teenagers, like, you know, gaming enthusiasts in Minnesota, mm-hmm. it must have been like a long winter or whatever, yeah. So that they decided, they were like, right, okay, we're gonna like document it, and like we're gonna do it start to finish and see if it's actually but the campaign, it got stuck in an unwinnable stalemate because the armies kept defecting into their own militias. So, like, even the world's longest game can end in a draw. Wow. Or just, like, not end. So what an absolute waste of time. Yeah. And
feel like if your game version of a war takes longer than the actual war did, like, you've made a mistake.
3 years. Like, the real war is three years. But, like, for people who complained that it's basically unplayable, the creator said, look, you're meant to play it for a couple of weeks or months. After that, get a life. Which is like, after he's taken your money, he's pretty
pretty abrasive.
Ballsy but unsympathetic. Mm. So that's it really. It's a completely unplayable board game meant to absolutely test you. You know, because it's like, there are games of Dungeons and Dragons or campaigns that go on for years and years and years, but that's a game of chance, and B, like, that's it relies along like human creativity.
Yeah, so that's sort of like by design, isn't it? Like, you could end it, but if the campaign people in it, they can, can't they?
Yeah, it's you know, storytelling essentially with like a game thrown in. And at no point do you have to. You know, it's not like elves have to do an extra water ration or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, there are people who have been playing the same game of, like, Civilization or, like, same, like, campaign on Warcraft for years and years and years. Mm. But that's their decision, you know. This is the only game I've found that by design is meant to be basically...
unwinnable.
Not unplayable, but just tedious. Yeah. Just, like, it's such a...
it's just a boredom simulator.
Yeah, putting the boredom in board games, I guess. No, the boredom. It didn't really work that.
Yeah, it nearly did. If you just let me wait over it, nobody would have thought about it.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. If I'd just taken the way, then it would have been all protein.
Indeed.
Way. Like, what's the most hours you think you've got in a video game?
Well, it's probably not the most I've got, but I'm 50 or 60 hours into Assassin's Creed Valhalla, and I feel like the way the
there
game...
there's no end in sight.
Yeah, the way the game's developing, I mean, maybe it'll just abruptly finish or something, but like, I feel like I'm at best maybe near the midpoint, probably not even there, based on how the story's feeling.
Is that tricky? Snottinghamshire?
Yeah, I'm not even there yet, actually. Yeah, it's mad.
Oh, right.
It's... I don't know, it might be. I can't remember. But yeah.
Yeah, like I like that game. It's a fun game. It turned into a bit of a grind.
When you save it and you clip and it shows you how many hours you played, and then you're just there going like, the story does in no way feel like I'm coming to any sort of conclusion. I feel like, if anything, I'm still in the exposition stage.
Yeah, yeah.
What about you?
It's probably a Bethesda game, because like, something like Skyrim, like, I've played through enough times, and then like every time there's new mods, you know, I keep dipping back into it. So I think maybe that, or maybe Fallout 3, or New Vegas, maybe. Like, any game where you can, replayability.
Yeah.
Whereas with Fallout 4, I literally got bored like mid some playthroughs. Mm-hmm. But yeah, any sort of open RPG, I think that...
Anything where you can Dungeons and Dragons it.
But yeah, be curious if enlisters tweet at Cooking with Grief and OG and Cooking, what's the game that they've got the most hours in? Because I think for a lot of people, it might be mobile games. Oh, like, they might have sunk a million hours into like...
Candy Crush.
It's Candy Crush or Solitaire or
Peggle, definitely, or one for me.
That maybe more when you had an office job. having never had an office job, I always assume that most people are playing Solitaire.
I don't even know if my work laptop has Solitaire.
Ah.
That's how they get you. That's how they boost productivity.
They just take it away. Whereas Minesweeper, I could never figure out as a kid, and it was just a random series of guesses that ended in failure. So, we'll move on to your topic for this episode.
Okay, so for my one and only topic, I'm going to talk to you about something I actually don't know that much about, so this should be fun.
For a change.
Mesoamerican pre-Columbian cultures.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I don't think either of us know.
No, I started trying to get a bit more into it because, like, say we, as any listeners would know, like, we... I wouldn't say we know a lot because we're idiots, but like, we know a fair amount about like Greco-Roman culture.
Yeah, well, it was mostly what we learned in school.
School, yeah, exactly. So like, we've got quite a decent handle on that, and like a bit of medieval Europe, and like, we know, like, obviously you know more China, Chinese history and stuff like that, and like, I've started learning a bit about East Asia, China, Japan, and Korea, that stuff. But, like, you know, I know a very superficial amount of that and stuff. And then, like, I realized, like, I didn't really know much about what happened in the Americas before. Because, you know, like, you've got the Incas had all these massive cities up the side of a mountain. And, like, you know, you've got, like, you know, everything about the Mayans has basically been corrupted into, like,
prophecy.
Garbled, like, prophecies that they didn't even believe in.
Yeah.
And stuff. But, yeah, so trying to... And also I play the Tomb Raider game set in South America and stuff. So that kicks things off a bit. I just copped to that. It was mostly it was mostly Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
So I'm going to focus on one in particular. But like, just for a bit of background about, you know, I mean, we've probably got listeners in America who might know more about this because it's, you know, more their backyard. But like, you know, there's the ones people know about. So there's the Incas who are like, we're in South America, and like, say they're not, I don't think they're technically Mesoamerican, but you know, there's a lot of like, I think there was some similarities of in the, you know, common ancestor way, way, way back.
MESO?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meso, Meso.
Yeah, okay.
And basically, Central and South America.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
North, South America, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Central America.
Yeah, yeah.
Up into like southern Central Mexico. Cultures, you know, they built the step pyramids. You know, they had, like, a pantheon that was different, but then there was, like, some crossover. You know, there was clearly, like, some sort of... You know, there was some common ancestry with the, like, religions and stuff like that. So, you know, like, whilst they had different pantheons, there was some, like... I think all of them seemed to... I think most of them had, like, the feathered serpent god. And they might have different names, but it's sort of like a... You know, there's crossover, basically. Different civilizations, but common sort of ancestry and stuff.
Yeah, in the same way that,
the Mayans...
Like, Buddhism and Hinduism have a lot of shared iconography.
Yeah, and then you got, like... So, you got the Aztecs, who were basically one of the last big empires. They were there when the Spanish arrived. The Incas were down in Peru, and were there again when the Spanish arrived, so they were the later ones. Mayans were a bit before them. Like, I think the Mayan civilization had collapsed before the Spanish arrived, like, well before. and the, you know, there's others, like say this is an area that's like massive. There are loads of city states and empires and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But the one I'm going to talk to you about, which is a city state which predates Aztecs, and they, although the Aztecs apparently later turned up and did, you know, like how the Romans, bring it back to something we know, the Romans basically, like, anything they saw that they liked, they sort of went, yeah, we were descended from them.
Yep.
You know, they were like, oh, we're basically the successor of the Greeks. And then they were like, and we were founded by a Trojan. And, you know, Hercules, yep, he was one of our founders. Apparently the Aztecs did the same. So there's this this city-state, so it was called Teotihuacan. Teotihuacan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I'm probably butchering that.
No, you probably nailed it first time.
Yeah, so apparently the Aztecs later turned up, found these, like, you know, remains of the city, and were like, this is fucking impressive. Like, these are definitely our ancestors.
Yeah.
Like, we are clearly these guys' successors. So they, it's like an archaeological site now. It's like a mass, you know, it's like a well-preserved, it's in Mexico, sorry. And it's huge city that, you know, fairly well preserved, and it was what apparently at its height would have been one of the biggest cities in the world.
And what sort of time period are we looking at?
I think it's about 900 AD ish.
Okay, just
double check that that's when we're looking, because apparently it was around from like apparently founded around the year zero, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it started before then. Year zero, it started becoming a real power, and then peaked around earlier than that, sorry, 750 AD. So
okay.
Reached its peak.
Mm-hmm.
650, 750. It had inhabitants of, they reckon, around 125,000, and they think that might have been enough to be like the sixth biggest city in the world at the time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it was by far the biggest city of its time, and they had, you know, like the step pyramids and all that.
They're called ziggurats if they're like got steps.
Yeah, that's it.
Boom,
boom, and it's like these grand boulevards. But the thing that's really sort of like interesting is, so there people have been looking at the how people lived. Say people have been looking at archaeologists; it's their job. And what they found is it was one. It's this huge city full of palaces and temples and everything. You know, like, you know, how you imagine lots of ancient cities and stuff were. But it was one of the most, from the archaeological evidence, suggests it was one of the most egalitarian societies ever.
Oh, wow.
So, there's a thing called the Gini, I think it's pronounced. Or it could be Gini. G-I-N-I. And it's basically a ratio that looks at the biggest houses in a city and compares it to like the smallest ones.
Mm-hmm.
So it sort of like uses the, well, I think, I don't know if it's, that's the only way of doing it, but yeah, it measures, it basically provides a ratio to show how like unequal a society is.
Mm-hmm.
So a value of one indicates that one household controls all of the wealth. So, you know, North Korea, I imagine, would be pushing one.
Mm-hmm.
And a value of zero would be 100% equal distribution of wealth.
Mm-hmm.
So modern Mexico is 0.75. The USA, 0.8. So, you know, both quite unequal. Pompeii apparently has a Gini index of about 0.6. Again, based on the dwellings.
Mm-hmm.
And Aztec cities typically were 0.3 to 0.4.
Oh, that's interesting. Do you know what the modern UK is?
I don't have it to hand.
Okay.
This, it's like one of those ones where I have to look at it and then like sack myself up before trying to pronounce it. Teotihuacan.
Yep, it's getting better every time.
Gini index of 0.1.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, basically, everybody lived in houses, most people. And apparently as well, like, the distribution of, like, luxury items and stuff within these houses, further evidence to this, shows that people lived in, like, much bigger houses than, any other comparable city. Or, no, they had that many comparable cities. But, you know, any other cities in, you know, pre-Columbian Americas, or even, like, you'd expect something like that would have a king who had all the power, and then everyone else gets the scraps.
the UK's Gini, if that's what I said, it's 0.35.
Oh, that's surprisingly low.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I mean, it's good, but I just the US is supposedly 0.8, then, you know, and
yeah,
like.
Yeah, I don't know if I mean, I know I like. I just Googled it, but
that much better.
Yeah, I mean, given that you know, you compare fucking Terrace House to Buckingham Palace.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm calling bullshit on that. I'm calling bullshit on that very quick Google. So the excavation's still got like ongoing now, is it?
Well, I guess it's like Pompeii, never quite finishes, but you know, there's like if you Google it, it's like a whole like you know, it's all open.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. Like, you can literally just see, like, boulevards and pyramids all standing, like, uncovered and stuff. You know, it's not, like, digging site. It all very much seems to be stand. And again, I haven't read to see whether or not, like, it was all buried or overgrown or what. Like, but as it currently stands, you can't miss it.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I fully admit that I'm an idiot when it comes to absolutely most things. But it's like you said in the introduction, like, our main sort of areas of interest and education are like obviously British history and you know European, focusing on like Greco-Roman. It's like my, you know, I'm okay on like fairly recent American modern history. You know, I'm going to like South and Central America is my knowledge is appalling. My knowledge of Africa is appalling, and it's like I really do wish that at school we taught world history rather than localized history, because we got it's like Romans, Tudors,
World War Two.
Oh,
World War One.
Yes, slave trade, but like not really covering it in the way that it should be covered.
Glossed over.
Yeah. I would like to learn more about.
Well, may I recommend Shadow of the Tomb Raider?
Like, not a book. It has to be a video game.
Yeah, video game.
Yeah, and if I wanted to
some probable loose interpretations of some of the mythology.
Yeah, and if I wanted to learn more about ancient Egypt, would you recommend Assassin's Creed Origins by any chance?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. What if I wanted to learn about the history of bandicoots?
Oh, well, for that, then
Spyro.
Assassin's Creed Australia. Bandicoots Australia? I don't actually know.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. Nailed it.
Where would you like the next Assassin's Creed game to be set? Because Assassin's Creed Australia is pretty good.
The way I basically learn history is I play an Assassin's Creed game and go, oh, that's interesting, I should learn some more about that. I've done exactly that with Vikings recently. Yeah,
Danny Wallace tells me facts about it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know, like I say, they've done most of the interest, you know, most of the
the big ones
that we already shown an interest in. Like, I don't think they've done China. Oh, the Mongol Empire. There we go. That's what I'd want to do.
Mostly horse-based assassinations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking ride across Russia, kill a dude and ride back. Done.
Yeah, it'd be quite an open game.
Yeah. A lot of goat meat.
I feel like this this episode accidentally has become more of a video.
What we're learning is we should talk about video games because it's what we keep defaulting to.
Exactly.
Despite the fact that I play maybe 2 video games a year.
Still our only frame of reference.
Yeah, still got strong opinions.
Well, on that note, shall we wrap up? So, that's my second topic done. Our second topic is what I meant to say. And it turns out, even with just 2 topics, we've been on quite a journey. Weirdly circled back to video games, surprising amount.
Yeah. But,
you know, I mean, with just 2 topics, we went from board games about North Africa through to Mesoamerican history, or Mesoamerica, because I don't know which.
Isn't miso a soup?
That's miso.
Oh, right.
With an I.
All right, Mesoamerican.
I don't know.
We don't do enough topics about soups. Next week, I'm going to do a topic about soup.
I look forward to it, because I'm actually a big soup fan.
Mm. If people could tweet what their favourite soup is, where would they do it?
Well, I was going to say, if you got any feedback, you know, about how this new format is like...
That's better.
Cooking with Grief thing, but if you also want to give your feedback on soup, that's also welcome. So tweet us at Cooking with Grief, which is no G on cooking because we couldn't fit enough characters in, or email us at cookingwithgrief@gmail.com with all the G's you'd expect in that one.
All the G's you want, as long as you're spelling it correctly.
get in touch, comment on YouTube, because this will be on YouTube. Leave a review, please, if you liked us. 5 stars, preferably. But, you know, you do you. You're not here to tell you what to do.
We're here to ask repeatedly, though.
Yeah. We're not your dad.
I wish I was.
And I'm... Yeah. Because you guys are all fabulous. You'd all make fabulous children, listeners. I think.
So
weird. I don't know. Anyway, welcome to the cult.
Go to bed.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No. We've somehow scraped through all the announcements.
Right.
Like, obviously, yeah, it helps the pockets, blah, blah, blah. I do want to hear about your soups.
Great. Well, I mean, this is what happens when we record before dinner time. Your mind's clearly gone to soup. And now my mind's gone to soup because I'm hungry. So I think it's time to say goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you for listening. And we'll come at you again soon.
Yeah. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
All right, everybody on the train, all aboard. You snooze, you lose.
Buy my loot boxes.
Not you. Get off the train. Don't let him on.
Oh, okay.
All right, listen here, Greenhorn. I'm going to teach you everything you need to know about how to conduct a podcast. First thing you need to know is never stay on topic ever.
Sir?
What do you want?
People are complaining about the Venom movie still.
I don't care. Feed them Justice League or something. Get them off my back.
Copy. But,
sir, it says in the book that you need to stay on topic as a podcast.
Screw the book, Greenhorn. The book was written by dinosaurs. Second thing you need to know is never report news that's not at least 2 or 3 weeks old.
Sir?
What do you want?
People are complaining about the Pokemon Go update.
I don't care. Just... gag them or something. Shut them up.
On it.
Sir?
What do you want, Greenhorn?
I think the train might be going off the rails.
That's exactly how we run this show. This is the Crazy Train of Thought podcast, brought to you by the Idiot Savants. Find us anywhere you listen to podcasts.
www.crazytrainofthought.com.
Oh, I just want some soup now.
Yeah.
Some chicken soup for the soul.
But specifically the mouth part of the soul.
Well, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mostly
the taste buds of the soul. So exactly. I'd say probably my favourite would be like a Chinese dumpling soup.
Oh.
Well, like a nice wonton soup. Something with a bit of heft.
Oh, I can actually bring in this back to my topic.
Right.
I've had a very nice Mexican corn soup.
Oh, right.
It's delicious. Yeah, like spicy chili and sweet corn. Soup. You can put some peppers.
You can put crab meat in there. Like, crab meat and sweet corn soup is quite a good combo.
Oh, that's good. Anyway, goodbye.
Oh, yeah, we're still recording. Shit. Bye.